Little background first. I was serving 15 year sentence in a penitentiary in southern Arizona. What I was in there for isn't important, but during my stay there were countless things that happened that no one could explain, and even more that no one wanted to know more about. It all started with a prison legend. Supposedly years ago, something awful and unexplainable happened in the prison. Every morning, we'd be woken up and expected to stand near the front of our cells while guards visually confirmed we were present and accounted for. Apparently, about a year before I got sent there, the most brutal and unexplainable thing happened during one of these routines. A man who had a cell to himself looked very off during the check. When a guard pulled over another guard to help him check it out, they found it wasn't actually the prisoner they were expecting at all. It was a totally different man. This man was wearing the skin of the other man over him, loosely fitting, draped over him. Apparently looked like a real monster. The scariest thing was, though, was the guy wearing the skin was not an inmate. They had no idea how he even got into the prison, let alone a cell. What's worse is they couldn't even figure out who the hell he was. He wasn't documented anywhere. And what's worse than that, they never even found the body of the man of the skin he was wearing. Pretty grisly stuff, I know. And I realise that's not a go-to definition of a skinwalker, but that's what the prison called him, the skinwalker. Didn't help that the guy never talked, apparently. Anyway, that's what started the whole skinwalker superstition around the yard. Apparently, the guy got shipped to a different spot about a month after it happened, and just about everyone in Gen Pop felt all the better for it. I heard about the story on the second day of my stay. Hell of a story to hear, to place in your home for the foreseeable future. Now on to the real shit though. Sure, the guy was the skinwalker, but all he did in the long run was get an old lifer and a vagal inmate to tell everyone about actual skinwalkers. It seemed like a lot of the prison culture actually revolved around them. Now apparently, skinwalkers are tricky to point out on the spot, but if you manage to survive around one for more than a minute or two, almost everyone can tell their mannerisms are all off. They can mimic human speech but not replicate it. They twitch manically. They have an unnatural gait while walking, but apparently they get better with experience. The old Navajo guy, his name was Carl, said that he was sure there was an actual one among the prisoners, slowly picking us off over the years. He called it the Grandmaster Skinwalker at one point. Apparently thought it had a human mannerisms down so well that you might not even be able to tell if you were cellmate for a day or two. It had to be good, he posited one night. He wouldn't expect a skinwalker to jump at any opportunity for a kill, but this one realised it had a revolving door of people to kill, and masterfully buried its time, as Carol thought, for years. A lot of the guys found humour in it. A lot were really on edge about it. Every once in a while in prison, people snap. Sometimes you'll find your cellmate swinging in front of your bunk, strung up around the neck by his pant leg. Sometimes you just can't take it anymore. But in our yard, people tended to snap in a very special way. It wouldn't be an outburst at dinner or a silent suicide in the night. Guys would just stop talking, hunch over and shuffle around. Any friendships they had would be mostly out the window. They would turn into a loner during rec time. They would let their hair hang in front of their faces. No one liked to talk about it, like if they did, it would happen to them next. I felt the same way. I didn't know if it was a skinwalker or just people going crazy, but I didn't want to find out. It wasn't clockwork or anything, but every time someone snapped in this way, it wasn't more than a couple of weeks before they were shipped off or transferred to God knows where without anyone else knowing beforehand. Then there was the nighttime occurrences. Short, loud bursts of sound echoed through my cell block during all hours of the night on a regular basis. It sounded like a mix between a pig's dying squeals and nails on a chalkboard. Just another thing that no one talked about. Even scarier was the shadows and footsteps. The block was dimly illuminated in the night by a few lights hanging from the ceiling outside the cells. I myself saw shadows flit across my walls on a regular occasion, when there were definitely no guards near my cell. One time near the end of my sentence, I woke up, looked at my back wall and made a perfect silhouette of a person standing there, but when I looked, my bunkmate was asleep and no one was outside my cell. And the footsteps. Everyone hated the fucking footsteps. They were the scariest part. In the night, sometimes more rarely than the shadows, you would hear ungodly fast footsteps. They sounded like wet feet slapping on tile floor. Whatever caused them would fly from one end of the block to the other in a dead sprint. Whatever it was inhumanely fast. If you happened to be awake before it started, by the time you heard the footsteps on one side of your cell and whipped your head around to see the thing run by, it sounded like it was three cells past you. Everyone hated the footsteps. I agreed, I thought they were the worst. I was released from that place about 9 months ago, and I have more stories than I can count. I swear, it was nearly my turn. About a week before I was discharged, my cellmate and a good friend of mine snapped in the same kind of way. I didn't sleep for an entire week. Well, I did sleep of course, but never for more than a few minutes at a time. Never turned my back on the guy. The scariest thing? I woke up one night to him somehow snaking his body through the bars of our cell. For reference, I couldn't get anything past my shoulder through them. The worst part though, he was coming back into our cell. On the day of my release, I didn't say a word to him, just left. He seemed fine with it, so was I. I'd made it through 15 years of prison fights, gang disputes, and for all I know, skinwalker abductions. I left through the front gates a free man. As I walked along the fence for the rec yard, I spotted my cellmate, standing off on his own, like he had for the last week or so. I shook my head, not even really sure if it was him anymore. I took one last look over the yard, this time from the other side of the fence. I wish I hadn't. There, standing off on his own, on the other side of the yard was Carl, slouched over, eyeing the other inmates and twitching manically. My mother and I had a strained relationship growing up. She was an alcoholic, and a mean drunk at that. My father left her when I was 4, and she took her anger out on me. It started with verbal abuse, but as I aged it turned physical. She's always denied her wrongdoings. Perhaps her chronic drunken state erased her memory, but something told me she knew exactly what she did. As I got older, the beatings became more regular and more severe. She called me a liar when I confronted her and accused me of fabricating stories for attention. At one point in time, she had me committed to a psychiatric hospital, convincing them I was harming myself. The moment I graduated high school, I moved out. I never married or had kids, I guess I'm scared in that sense, but I'm content on my own. So you can imagine how I felt when I received a call out of the blue from my aunt. Laura, your mother called me. She's told me that she's been diagnosed with Alzheimer's. She needs help. I scoffed. My aunt pleaded with me. Laura, we're her only family. I don't care for her myself, plus I'd have to uproot my entire life. We don't have the finances for a care home, I'm begging you. I protested, but eventually gave in. It's been a year of caring for her. It wasn't so bad at first. She was unusually appreciative, but it went downhill fast. When you have a family member with Alzheimer's, the best you can hope for is for them to become pleasantly demented. That wasn't the case. Once she stopped recognizing me, she screamed at the sight of me, calling me hideous names. It quickly turned physical. Punches didn't make much of a dent at her age, but she learned that hitting me with a plate or a bowl did. She became fond of throwing things and waking me up in the middle of the night with her hands around my neck. What was I supposed to do? Restrain an 80-year-old woman? Hit her back? I just put up with it. A week ago I had to bring her to the ER. The doctor told us it was a heart attack. She would need major surgery to live. At her age, the risks outweighed the benefits. I felt guilty, but so relieved. I held her hand as her breathing became more laboured. Laura, she whispered. It was the first time she recognised me in months. Tears filled my eyes. I have something to tell you, she said weakly. I was startled by the coherence in her speech. She looked me straight in the eyes. No one ever diagnosed me with Alzheimer's. I just like beating the shit out of you. She took one more breath and closed her eyes. I had always wanted to surprise my dad on his birthday. I know that adults are supposed to surprise their children on their birthdays, but I feel bad because his birthdays are never as exciting as mine. Ever since I can remember, he's always insisted on surprise birthday parties. This year, I'm going to surprise him. Things haven't been the same between him and Mum, and maybe something like this can bring them together. They're always fighting nowadays, and for the strangest reasons. He snapped at Mum the other day for going through his stuff in the basement. It was the weirdest thing. I tried to think of all the things I could surprise him with. Adults are hard to understand. I never really got his love for cars, but maybe he would like it if I at least pretended to like them too. I settled on the two of us hopefully having a bonding experience over making a model car. I'm going to sneak into the basement and see if he has all the tools for the job. If not, I can buy some from my paper trail money and surprise him with the tools and all the pieces to put together the car. Excitedly, I wait until night, everybody's asleep, and take a flashlight. It's more of a toy, but it will do the job. Excitement turns into slight fear, but my dad always told me not to be afraid of the dark because I am stronger than anything that could be in there. I go down into the basement and start looking around. It never made sense to me that everything is pitch black in here. What's the point of having a basement if you can't see anything in it? I shuffle along in the dark and hit a switch. I drop the flashlight and my knees turn to jello. "Sir, sir, you said you'd let me go if I didn't make any noise, sir. Please come back." My wife has found out where our children had been taken by the kidnapper. The kidnapper doesn't know that my wife knows, but at the same time, my wife is also not opening her mouth. I urged her to tell me where our kids are, but she isn't going to say anything. I couldn't fathom any kind of understanding as to why my wife wouldn't say where the whereabouts of our kids are. She is so calm now, and before, when she didn't know where her kids were, she was panicking. Every day she would turn frantic over something, and now that she knows where they are, she is calm and isn't saying a single thing. How our kids got kidnapped was when we went out to a sunny beach. Our two kids got snatched when my wife and I took our eyes off them for just a moment. That's how it happens, you know, and that's how life can turn in sudden huge events. I've been arguing with her and even screaming with her to tell me where our kids are. I've even tried threatening violence to force her to tell me, but I could never lay a finger on my wife. She's a closed book now, and even though she knows where our kids are being held as prisoners, she says nothing. Makes me insane. I tried to have conversations with her about it, telling police about where our kids are, and now that she's seen them without the kidnapper's knowledge, we can rescue them now. She would just snap at me and break something to shut me up. I had no choice but to go to the police and tell them that my wife knows where our kids are being held, but my wife isn't saying anything. The police were baffled by this, and they even thought my wife was behind the kidnapping. They had no evidence to prove this though, and I would never believe that my wife would be behind the kidnapping of our kids. I saw the kidnapper with our kids and I followed him. He took them into some field, then from afar I could see that he killed them. I screamed, but he couldn't hear me. Right now everyone is still looking for them, and everyone thinks they're still alive. If they find them, then I'll have to fully accept that they are dead. As long as they're still missing, then the idea of them being alive is keeping me happy. I decided to accept my wife's explanation. There are many ways a person can die during strangulation. Some just take a bit longer. Some you can survive from, but all leave a lasting scar. Here's what happens. During strangulation, arteries can tear. That tear makes it possible for blood to enter the arterial wall. The layer of the wall then continues splitting, which can lead to a fatal stroke. Also, during strangulation, your head feels like it's literally exploding. Imagine putting your fist around the middle of a blown up balloon, then imagine trying to pump more air into it. That pressure and eventual explosion is similar to the situation your brain is in. In some strangulation cases, the arteries themselves are obstructed, cutting off oxygen to the brain. This attack is sometimes called a brain attack, because of the similarities to a heart attack. But make no mistake, it's different and it's very painful. When you press hard enough on the corroded arteries, the two big blood vessels on the left and right side of the neck, your heart will fall out of rhythm, which is known as arrhythmia, sending it into cardiac arrest. When you place your fingers on your neck to feel your pulse, you're hearing the bum bum of these arteries. Pushing too hard and for too long here is one of the quickest ways to cause a fatality during strangulation. If our veins were a road system, the jugular vein would be the express lane. It had no intersecting valves, meaning it's a direct line for blood to reach the heart. So, when pressure is applied to the jugular vein, a backup of blood can occur in the brain. This can quickly cause unconsciousness, and eventually result in death by asphyxiation. As you can imagine, the confusion that comes with being strangled turns into panic really fast. The tightness around the throat sends a code red signal to the brain, alerting it to freak out, and with all cylinders firing at once, a panic attack often comes next. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, this is exactly what happened to Mrs. Lewis via the hands of her husband, the deceased. He strangled her over and over to the point of death, but he always managed to bring her back for more. This, ladies and gentlemen, this is why she stabbed him. This is why she killed him. She realised that the next time could be the last time. It was clearly self-defence. The prosecution will want you to focus on the fact that Mr. Lewis was asleep at the time of the attack, and that it was brutal and senseless because of the sheer amount of stab wounds. But I want you to focus on her current, past and everlasting injuries, and the fact that eventually, Mr. Lewis would have killed his wife. Please don't send an abused and very scared woman to death row. Whoa, this has been a roller coaster. One of my colleagues asked me out on a date. We've had chemistry ever since I started working there. I mean, the way he'd smile at me and he winks. He looked delicious. One night while we were working overnight, I sort of gave in and said fuck it, so I pulled his face and we had our first kiss. It was majestic. You know the cliche saying, it was like there were sparks flying around me. Well, it was exactly like that. After our date at his romantic restaurant themed red and white roses all around us, but not fancy at the same time, I decided to invite him over to my place. You know how we men are. I went to the kitchen and decided to get us some wine. I also turned on a deep fryer. I don't know how to cook meat in regular frying pans. The smell on my face and the butterflies in my stomach proved how happy and excited I was. I brought him the alcohol and I watched him as he took a big sip out of the glass. Sorry, I was thirsty, he said. My mood plummeted like a stone sinking to the depths when I turned on the TV and heard the reporter say, "This man is a dangerous serial killer, and a police sketch was created thanks to one of his surviving victims. If you see him, seek help and call 911 immediately." I was sure that that serial killer was in my home right now. I looked into his eyes, and there was no humanity left whatsoever. Just pure psychopathy. "Oh, I guess now you know my secret. I have to kill you earlier than expect." I saw his eyelids close involuntarily. He tried to stand up, but quickly he fell down to the floor like a book slipping from a shelf. It's fortunate he took a rather big sip of that wine that I put ketamine in. I was halfway through the woods when I first saw the old man. I'd missed my bus, so I had to walk home. Cutting through the woods behind the school was a lot faster than walking through the neighbourhood. I saw him before he saw me. When he turned around and noticed me looking at him, he looked surprised, like I'd caught him doing something he wasn't supposed to be doing. Not wanting to intrude in his business, I turned my head away and kept walking. I saw him again the next time I was walking through the woods. He was dressed differently and loitering around a different area. This time when he saw me, he gave a quick wave of his hand before going back to whatever it was that he was doing. I returned the greeting and kept on walking. I saw him three more times before I was finally forced to talk to him. The fourth time I saw him, he stepped out from behind a tree, blocking my path. "Is your name Lee Austin?" the man asked. "Why do you want to know?" "I was hoping you could help me with something," was his reply. "With what?" "It's better if I show you." He started to walk off into the woods, but stopped when he realised I wasn't following him. "I'm not going to hurt you," he said. "I doubt I could if I wanted to." He was probably right about that. I was about 6 inches taller, 100 pounds heavier, and over 40 years younger than him, if I had to guess. "It won't take long," he said. "It's just over by that log over there," he pointed. I followed the man over to the log, keeping my distance in case he tried anything funny. "Do you recognise that?" he asked. pointing at something sticking out from beneath the log. "It looks like a piece of cloth," I said. "What about the white part?" he gestured. "Does it look like it could be a letter?"
"I suppose," I agreed.
"Sort of looks like the one in your jacket." He looked up at me. I looked down at the letterman jacket I was wearing.
"Yeah, I guess it does."
"All right," the man said. "You can go now." The old man watched the teenage boy walk away. When he was out of earshot, he pulled out his phone and called his partner. "Remember that football star that disappeared in the woods behind the high school 5 years ago?" he said.
"Yeah," his partner replied. "I found his body."
"How'd you manage that?"
He looked over at the boy and watched as he vanished from sight, something he'd seen him do every year for the past 4 years.
"I had a little help," he said.
Do not listen to the cries coming from the woods. It doesn't matter how much they sound like your lost loved ones. Anyone from around here will tell you that. You especially do not follow them into the dense growth of pines. If you do, it's all over, or so they say. Layla really should have known better. She too grew up here in the shadow of that forest. Perhaps after so many years away, she'd forgotten. I hadn't realised she'd been walking to the boundary each night, speaking to them in hushed tones, until two nights before we were supposed to leave. When she left while I was still awake, I had to follow her.
"It's Mum," she turned to look at me, such pain in her eyes, but her voice calm. "She's been calling for me since we got here.
If it weren't for the funeral, we would have never come back to our hometown. We had no fond memories, only a handful remaining of both our families, too stubborn or ensnared in its grasp to leave." So, there we were, Layla in our PJs, foot hovering near the deep black soil where the woods began. I couldn't lie to her by saying it wasn't Nazrin she heard. Layla's eyes were glassy when she turned to face me. I reached out for her hand, but it slipped through my fingers and she stepped onto the other side. I wasn't sure what I expected, her to disappear into mist, be snatched away, but she just wove through the pines frantically. I didn't even stop to think. There was nothing to think about. I ran in after her. She was standing still by the time I caught up, focused on something in the distance that I knew better than to look at. I scooped her up. She put up no resistance. Neither of us fell back asleep, fell to ease only when the next day passed uneventfully. We lay in bed quietly that final night, the rental car packed up and ready for our mid-morning flight, listening to the storm. I wondered if she heard it too, the sounds of steps along the steep eaves above her head, timed so that they nearly blended in with the patter of the rain. She clutched my hand in the darkness, confirming that indeed she did. We were only in town for a few days. We'd escaped this place. We weren't like so many others that remained, spent their entire lives here. Perhaps beyond that too. A window squeaked open in protest. We had a life together across the country, in a tiny apartment where each night was not filled with distant cries of pain, misery, and invitation. It was a pity that we'd die here after all. The smell of rain filled the tiny cabin. I heard it falling on the kitchen floor. We'd been so close to leaving this place. Instead we, like so many before us, would become just two more voices crying out from the woods. Don't go into the woods with Bobby, my mum reminded me when I left house for school that day. Bobby's parents were poor, fat and stupid, but to me he would always be the kid that offered me half of his sandwich on the first day of school after bullies had taken mine. This small kindness brought tears to my eyes. You see, I have to move every couple of years because my dad's job, so I've never made real friends. Bobby seemed like someone I could trust. That night, we decided to sneak out together. I crawled from my window, retrieved my bike from the shed and met Bobby. Our bikes flicked freshly fallen rainwater in an arc of the asphalt. He explained our mission. To see the palmetto werepig. It was a man-boar cryptid that roamed the low county eating bad children. Armed with our flashlights and raincoats, we ventured into the woods. Aside from the rainwater dripping off the trees and the occasional hooting owl, it was quiet. Soon we approached a moonlit clearing.
"Well," I said, "where is it?"
"Oh, come on," he cheered. "Let's wait around and tell some ghost stories or something." So we did. We joked, made hand puppets and held at the moon. I was cold, uncomfortable, but exhilarated. This was the childhood my parents had been keeping me from. I feel like a real kid, with a real friend for the first time. As our night was winding down, I left our little clearing to pee before we made our trek back home. When I returned, Bobby was gone. I called his name, but no one, not even the owls, responded. I was heartbroken. Bobby had left me cold and alone in the woods. I marched back to where we had stashed our bikes. His was gone. It wasn't until days later that Bobby was officially declared missing. I went with the search party every night in hopes of finding my first and only friend. Every day I felt more guilty. I tried to not think about it when I sat down for Thanksgiving dinner. Mum had prepared her famous Thanksgiving ham. "Mum, Dad," I said, "I have something to tell you." The sound of scraping silverware stopped. I was there with Bobby the night he disappeared. I was too scared to tell anyone because we weren't supposed to be out there in the first place. "I'm so sorry." They said nothing and returned to putting forkful after forkful of pork in their mouth. "Did you hear what I said?" I shouted. "Yes," my father said calmly. He looked at my mother. She said, "We have a surprise for you. Bobby's here with us right now," he said. I looked down at the abnormally thick layer of fat on the meat in front of me. "We told you not to go into the woods with Bobby." I'm a big fan of exploring the woods near my hometown. I've been doing this since I was a little kid. My dad and I used to go on long trips in the woods, and we would sometimes even stay the night. When I got older, I started going on exploration trips deeper into the woods. I've just turned 25 and wanted to celebrate with a long hike into the woods. It's a very sunny summer, so I packed my bags and ran out of the house like a little kid. I planned on staying in the woods until 10 p.m. and then walked to my car and spend the night there. It was beautiful. The sun was shining and the birds were singing. I spent most of my hike admiring the scenery, and I was so absorbed by everything that I lost track of the time, and soon it was nighttime. When I checked my watch, it was 10:30 p.m. I started walking towards my car when I saw it. It was a small building with a big sign that read Motel. I was skeptical at first, but when I thought about it more, I decided that it was better to sleep in a motel than in my car. It was 2 stars, so it wasn't very expensive. I am now in my room, totally freaked out after reading this note that was lying on the nightstand. "Welcome to the Firefly Motel. The rules that are listed below are very important for your safety. Please take them seriously and read them carefully. Rule number 1. Should you hear a male voice underneath your bed, please leave the room immediately and notify reception. Rule 2. Should you hear a female voice underneath your bed, get up from the bed and enter the bathroom. Do not leave the bathroom until you hear the door from your room close. Rule number 3. At 2:30 a.m, you will hear a child outside of your door. This is very important. If the child is crying for their mama, tell them that she is in room 323. The child will go away and you can go and get some sleep again. If the child is crying for their papa, turn off the lights, get underneath the bed sheets, and don't even think about looking at the pillow beside you. Rule number 4. There will be a knock on the door at exactly 4 a.m. Whatever you hear, don't open the door. Rule number 5. At 4:30 a.m, you will hear the door open. Pretend that you're sleeping, and I can't overstate this enough. If you feel breathing on your face, do not open your eyes. We hope you'll have a pleasant stay at the Firefly Motel. If you have any advice on what I should do, please respond. Hello, my name's Ninon. I'm French, and my story takes place in a small countryside in the south, a place where nothing usually happens. As I tell you this story, it's now been 2 years since it happened. I was 13 years old. One evening, my parents decided to go have dinner at a friend's house, but I preferred to stay at home. It was a Friday night and I was tired. It's actually quite common for my parents to leave me alone at home in the evening, because I rarely go with them when they go out to eat or to parties. So I'm used to being alone at night. I must admit that I often have this feeling of being watched when I'm alone at home, whether it's day or night. But I always thought it was just paranoia, until that night. So we're at the infamous night when my parents go to dinner at a friend's house and leave me alone. I'm watching TV on the couch with my cap, and then I decide to go back to my room to be on my phone. After several minutes, I hear noises coming from the kitchen. Actually, that's quite common, but once again, I chalk it up to fatigue and stress. Then a little later, I hear what sounds like a glass being placed on the dining table. The stress becomes more and more intense, and I did the dumbest thing to do in those moments. I went to see, and there was indeed a glass on the dining table, and it couldn't have been me, because I always have a bottle in my room, and I only drink from it. The stress rises even more. But at the same time, I prefer to stay in denial and tell myself that I left the glass on the table while clearing it. As I'm about to return to my room, I hear something scratching behind the garage door. I'm about to open it, thinking it's my cat wanting to come in. But I freeze when I reach for the handle, and I remember that my cat was on the couch with me earlier. So I turn my head to check if he's still there. And unfortunately, he is, and so is my dog. At that moment, I genuinely worried, and I rushed back to my room, but on the way back, I noticed that my parents' bedroom window and the bathroom window are wide open. At that point, I didn't know what to do, so I locked myself in my room with my cat and dog and scrolled through TikTok, trying to forget about the incident. When my parents come back, I acted as if nothing had happened. I don't really know why, but currently, no one knows about this story. Recently, I moved out of my apartment. I simply had to because I didn't feel safe with my landlords. I live in this really nice Dumbo apartment in Brooklyn for a few months with my roommate, who paid for most of the rent since our parents are super rich. Our landlords were actually this seemingly really sweet couple who lived a few floors above with their kids. The first few weeks were somewhat normal, except for the fact that every time I saw their kids in the elevator, they would scream at me before they got off and then just ran away. I thought it was funny and cute at first, but then their eldest son came to visit and started doing the same thing, and he looked about my age. I didn't really think much of it since maybe he was just playing with his younger siblings. Shit got weird really when I bumped into all of them together and we talked for a bit. Out of nowhere, while we were having a pleasant conversation, the dad apologised to me saying that his son might act strange because he's, you know, a retard. I was pretty shocked with him just saying that out of the blue. I paused for a bit, and I can't really remember what I said, but remember just wanting to get the hell out of this conversation now. A few days later, I bump into the dad again in the elevator. I was pretty standoffish, and he was just talking about how great my apartment is, and how much of a generous guy he is for giving us such a low rate. Then he asked if I could babysit his kids, as he and his wife and his eldest son would be at a dinner. I said no at first, but he counter-offered saying he'd pay $150 an hour, and being the greedy idiot that I am, I agreed. This is where I fucked up. When I get to his place, I was speechless. His apartment wrapped around the entire floor of the building. It was the nicest apartment I will ever see, and that's for sure. About an hour in, everything was normal. I was playing some fighting game with his kids, when we suddenly heard the front door slam. I told him to stay there, so I peeked to see what was going on, and I see the dad falling all over the place, clearly drunk as shit. He started walking towards me, and at the last minute fell face first into his couch. I must have popped a blood vessel trying to hold in my laughter. I asked if he was okay, and I walked over to assist him. He then turned around, looked at me and said, "My wife will let us, please." When I tried asking what, his wife walked up to me, thanked me, paid me, and told me to come back another time. I just kind of went back to my apartment in shock, wondering what the fuck had just happened, and I definitely wasn't going back. I told my roommate, and she told me that she'd also bumped into the dad, and he told her, "My wife is cool, just so you know," with no explanation and just left. At this point, we knew that we sure as hell were not renewing our lease. We didn't see our landlords our final month. We kind of joked to our friends about how our landlords were creepy cucks. The next time I see them was actually with my boyfriend, who was well aware of what they were trying to do. It was an intensely awkward elevator ride, as when they saw us in there, they just went quiet and smiled and nodded at us repeatedly. As we step out of the elevator, the dad shouts "Hey" to us and winks at me as the door's closed. After that, I asked my boyfriend to stay with us for the remainder of our lease, because at that point my roommate and I were freaked the fuck out. Our final and creepiest encounter was a few days before moving out. My roommate walked out of the apartment and both landlords were sitting in front of the elevators waiting for us. She said they started sobbing when they saw her and they begged us to stay. They apparently apologised for making us uncomfortable and said they thought we were the pretty young girls that they were waiting for. She didn't say a word to them and got on the elevator and called me to warn me they were outside and they started to knock. My boyfriend answered and said when the guy saw him, he asked if I was here. Of course my boyfriend said no, but they tried walking in anyway. I walked out to my room saying I'll call the police if they don't leave, and they begged me not to and run out the apartment. A few days ago, we get a text from a random number saying we could live there 6 months free if we just gave them a few nights. Of course, blocked and deleted. The whole thing was such an uncomfortable experience living there all those months, especially knowing that they had keys to our apartment. I grew up in a small town. Total population was maybe 2,000. Everyone knew everyone else, or at least knew your family members. It was a safe town, with mostly middle class working families. Nothing major ever happened, and the crime rates were low. I grew up feeling safe and secure. And to know, I grew up in the 90s. One summer day, my good friend Jenny and I were out for a bike ride. We were 11 or 12 years old. We were allowed to bike anywhere we wanted, as long as we didn't leave our town and wore our helmets. There was a new road being constructed in between the two main neighbourhoods. The new road was to provide a shorter way of accessing the main road to get to the next town. At the time, the road was still under construction, but was nearly complete. All that was left was paving and painting. Jenny and I decided to bike down the gravel road. Jenny and I were about halfway down the road. The road was about a kilometre long. At the halfway point, we noticed a man walking. He was early 30s and very handsome. I didn't recognise him, and Jenny didn't either. As we get closer, he broke out a big smile and said hello. We said hello back and he didn't seem threatening or scary. He asked us if we were having a good summer and we said yes. He told Jenny and I he was a photographer from a nearby city and was in town to scout out models for his new postcard company. He said Jenny and I had beautiful features. He said everything in a very flattering way that made us feel special. He said we could be models. He asked if he could take our pictures. He said we had the look he wanted, and the scenery right now is perfect to promote the town. He said he knows he will sell tons of postcards and we could all make money. Jenny and I eagerly agreed. He got us to stand with our hands on our hips and smile big. He took a disposable camera out of his back pocket and began snapping photos. He took about 10 photos in total from many angles. I remember feeling a little uneasy and said we should probably go because we need to be home soon. He said he would get in touch with our principal on the first day of school to give us some money from the postcard sales. We foolishly confirmed we went to the local elementary school, although it was the only elementary school in town, so it wouldn't have been hard to figure out. Neither Jenny or I remember to this day giving him our names. This is an important detail for later. Jenny and I talked about becoming famous on the way home. I told Jenny that I wondered why he didn't have a professional camera. She said she wondered that too, but agreed cameras are expensive, so maybe didn't have a nice one with them in case it rained. That evening at supper, I told my parents about my potential newfound fame. They were horrified and got on the phone with Jenny's parents. The two sets of parents called police and gave statements. Police sort of downplayed it and said it was unusual, but nothing criminal had happened. My parents had a long talk to me about safety, as did Jenny's parents with her. The following spring, Jenny and I were hanging out together. This time a little older and a little wiser and a lot more cautious. We were walking along a quiet side street, just talking about music and TV shows. A minivan approached us and slowed down. A friendly looking woman asked us if we knew where Smith's Road was. We told her she just needed to drive straight for less than a minute, and it's the first right hand turn. She said she was having difficulty finding it, and would be mind hopping in and showing her. I instantly said no, and Jenny also declined. Then, the woman said it was okay because she knew who we were. She called us both by our first name and said she saw us on the postcard. By now, we were both very freaked out. We were on a stretch of the road that had no houses. The nearest one was about 100 metres away, and it wasn't common for people to have cell phones back then, so neither Jenny or I had one. The woman continued to ask us to get into our minivan. Jenny, who is normally super chatty, was staring into the vehicle intensely. Her body language was stiff and I could tell she was scared. Suddenly, and seemingly out of nowhere, Jenny screamed, "Run!" I didn't know what was happening, but I ran and followed Jenny. We ran off down the road and through a field and into a yard another street over. I recognised the yard and house as belonging to a school teacher. We pounded on our door and she answered. We told her what happened and then Jenny said something I will never forget. She said she saw the photographer man from last summer, crouching down in the very back row of seats. She said she knew something bad was going to happen. Police and our parents were called. We gave statements and a vehicle description, as well as descriptions of the man and woman. Unfortunately, the police were never able to locate them. Jenny and I never saw them again. We had some serious trust issues with strangers after those encounters, and I had nightmares of being kidnapped in early adulthood. Always make sure to teach your children that strangers are not safe, no matter how nice they are. My situations could have had a much more unfortunate outcome if things had gone even slightly different. Those are two people I hope I never meet again. Over 4 years ago, I went to work at a warehouse in a small town that I'm from. I decided to leave after my health started to get worse physically, and I was diagnosed with a panic disorder and severe anxiety after the situation that I'm about to tell you. This changed the way that I developed friendships after that job, that's for certain. So I started this job on April Fool's Day of 2018, which was odd to me, and I had no kind of high expectations for the job. All I wanted to do was my job, get paid, and go home, so I had two children at home and many things that I could work on there. The job wasn't hard and it made pretty good money for all duties considered, so I really couldn't complain. I worked second shift for about 5 months and I went to day shift. While working on second shift, I kept to myself mostly, until one day I met someone from one of the lines after we struck up a conversation about gaming. For the sake of the story, we'll name him Kev. Well, Kev was a pretty good guy and we had a lot of things in common. I went home that night and he popped up as a suggested friend on Facebook. Again, slightly odd, so I decided to add him. When I did, we started talking more at work until he suggested that we should hang out, so we did hang out, pretty frequently. We were friends for a month at this point, and one day he decided he was going to introduce me to his partner. She seemed decent at first, super nice, and didn't seem to be judgmental type, so I was cool with her. From then on, I would hang out with him when my kids were spending time with my mother. One time we were talking at a restaurant and he started to vent to me. Dude, she's such a bitch sometimes. The other day, I forgot to take the trash out and she threatened to stab me if I didn't. I've never been in a relationship where someone threatens me, but she's not got good intentions, dude. When he said that to me, I was concerned, but of course, we had only been friends for a month, so I thought that maybe he was joking morbidly, so I chuckled at him. He gave me a pretty serious look and said, "I'm not joking, she really did," and that concerned me. Fast forward about 8 months, they're still together and we all hang out pretty regularly, forgetting the things he told me. One day we were talking and he seemed a little off that day, so I asked him what was going on in front of her. He flashed a smirk and said, "Nothing dude, I'm just a little tired." He didn't have his eyes on me though, he had them on her when I asked that. When we went to work the next day, I asked him again, "Do you promise to keep this between us?" "Of course," I agreed. He said that he was breaking up with her and she went a little crazy. He said that she grabbed her gun and pointed at him and said, "If I can't have you then, no one else will." He said that he defused the situation as trying to look for a way out. Not really knowing what to say, I just said, "You'll figure it out, man. If you need somewhere to go then, you can come stay with me until you get her out of the house." Fast forward to another year. He finally decided to leave her. When he did, she flipped out again. This time, he told her over text. She said that she was going to find him and kill him, and he was actually out of work that day with a vacation day. He sent me a text that said, "Hey, let me know if she comes over to work looking for me." That struck me as odd because I have no idea of the situation that was unfolding. She actually did come to her job and she asked me where he was and I said, "Well, I have no idea. I thought he was with you and you guys went out of town or something." All she did was roll up her window and drive off. I called him and told him that she'd come by and he called the police about it. They had found her up the road with a loaded gun in the car. 2 months later, he decided to talk to her again and when he did, he had something to tell me. When he called me, he asked if I had seen her around and I hadn't. He said, "I would take some vacation days if I were you." Dumbfounded, I asked him why. He said to me, well, because she's out of jail and her cousins are in town trying to find people that she has personal vendettas with. You're one of them. At that point, I was terrified. I grabbed my kids and I went out of town. Took 2 weeks off work. Come to find out that the next day, her and her cousins went to the next town over and shot 3 people in an apartment and killed them. I got the news about it that day after it happened. The reason why he knew they were coming after me is because they made a Facebook Messenger group that he was included in and sent a list of names. Everyone regarded it as spam and decided to disregard the message, but he knew what it was. 3 of the names on that list were the people that they had shot. The 4th name on that list was mine. After they found the evidence and he decided to go public about the group and screenshots that he had, they were all charged for the 1st-degree murder. From then on, I was very careful about who I would stick my neck out for because, even though he knew the context of that list and her intentions, he decided not to inform anyone else on it. Needless to say, we aren't friends anymore and I dodged a bullet. Literally. When I was 19, I frequently played a popular Minecraft server and I held a senior moderator position on it, so quite a few people would try to speak to me in the game. One guy, I'll call him Martin, was very nice. I added him in Discord and we would frequently chat while playing games. After a while it turned into daily calls with him. He was nice, funny and overall a good friend. After a while I told Martin that I was going to my boyfriend's apartment for a few weeks and I wouldn't be in chat as often. He got upset, saying I was his only friend and he would be lonely. I didn't realise he had formed this sort of connection with me, so I knew I had to step away a bit because it felt off. One day, I got a package I didn't order. It was a puzzle of one of my prom pictures. I had no idea where it came from. Then Martin messaged me asking if I liked the gift. I didn't know he had got my address or the picture. I tried to keep some distance but still chatted with him because overall he was a pretty good friend. That was my mistake. I always only seen the good in people, never the bad. Then things started to change. A random girl messaged me on Discord. She was an old friend of Martin's, and she wanted to warn me about the things he did to her. He had a crush on her, and when she denied him, he harassed her endlessly. He would follow her around in each game she played and spam her address in the chat. He even changed his username to her phone number. This was when I knew I couldn't continue my friendship with Martin. I called him on Discord, explaining I knew what he had done to the other girl, and I was uncomfortable. I gave Martin an ultimatum. Either we end our friendship now, or he seeks mental health treatment to get through his struggles and I would support him along the way. He didn't like this. Martin started panicking over the phone, saying his life was ending. I was his life, he wouldn't be anything without me. I kept trying to assure him that this wasn't true, but he persisted. He then turned on his webcam and I saw him walk away, then come back with multiple guns. Large guns, semi-automatic, a few Glocks. He started loading them on camera, pointing them at his head, or at me. I tried to talk him down. This went on for almost an hour, him loading and unloading multiple guns, threatening to shoot himself or me. He had known my address from when he sent the random puzzle, and I knew he lived in driving distance. I told him I was sorry, but I can't be held responsible for whatever he does. I thought we were just friends. He said he would make sure to blame me in his note. I hung up and blocked him on everything. He contacted me for months after, finding social media accounts I had and spamming my DMs. I hope we never meet again. When I was younger, we lived in an old Victorian house. Everyone would notice weird things. I was home alone organising the silverware when I dropped a fork onto the table, only to have it bounce once and fly at the wall like someone slapped it. I still have no idea how you can drop something straight down and have it launch horizontal for 5 feet. My parents, when they first bought the house, turned off all the lights, 5 floors if you count basement and attic. My mum did the top 2, and father did the bottom. They met in the middle, went to the first floor, left, got to the car, and noticed not only was the 3rd floor light on, but the blinds were now up. We had a seesaw. My mother turned on the light and saw it violently going up and down. I was in the basement and I felt a hand brush down my back. I jumped and turned and saw no one there. I convinced myself it was just my shirt moving weird. As I went up the steps, I heard giggling. When I was older, I was sitting on the couch and heard my dad say, "What the f- watch out," right before a framed puzzle we had fell on me. My dad said he saw it lift itself off the hook. We had a Mastiff, a Rottweiler and a German Shepherd. They refused to go to the attic. Our entrance had two sets of doors, the front doors, then a small room, then the second set of doors. We never locked those doors as it was two large bolts that went onto the floor and then a third bolt that held the two doors together. Locking it was very hard with a key, so you could only do it from the inside with considerable force. We came home one day and the door was locked with all three bolts. In other words, our completely sealed house was locked from the inside. My mother flipped, grabbed us and ran to the payphone to call the police, because if that door is locked then there's someone in the house, unless they left via a second, third story window. Three cop cars came. They unlocked the door with my mother's key and swept every last inch of that place down to one of them going into the crawl space. Nothing. Not only that, my mother's gold necklace was laying on the table and all the windows were locked. We had a family friend who is a cop and one of my uncles who is a cop come spend the night. Next morning, everyone is up and my uncle goes to leave only to see that the door is again locked from the inside. We removed those locks the same day. Mastiff was laying next to me while I was watching TV. Suddenly he jumps up and backs into me. He's growling and snarling while staring up the steps. The other two dogs run in and immediately have their ears go back and their mohawks go up. This went on for several minutes. Our German Shepherd started inching towards the step and did a little lunge and nipping at the ear, baring his teeth. About 5 seconds later, I heard what sounded like someone fully sprinting up the steps of the first floor from the landing to the second floor steps, then the third. I called my mum from the house phone. While on the phone, I heard what I can only describe as a wail from the third floor. Years later, parents are divorced. I'm with my dad for the weekend. I helped him clean the third floor. We put the toys in a large toy chest from the closet they were in. While we were brushing our teeth, I go pale. I hear something, so I shut off the water and ask my dad to listen. We both are completely quiet. The sound starts again. It's the sound of a clink, clink, but a bit of a rhythm to it. I couldn't place it at first, then said, "Dad, I think that's a xylophone." We go up and the toy chest is open and the xylophone is on the floor. This is a story I don't often tell. I promise sincerely that this has scarred me for life, and although I have looked into psychological explanations for what I heard and natural explanations for what occurred, they remain unsatisfactory. When I was a child, I was scared of the dark. I swore to my mother I heard voices in it. They were not evil, but they were not familiar, and so they scared me. It was not uncommon in the middle of the night for me to wake up and hear whispers, as I would call them, when asking my mum. She figured they were just bumps in the night and typical kid nightmare material. I tried often to explain to her that it was more than that, that they sounded different from one another the way people's voices do. On some nights I would get so scared from these whispers that I would sleep in my mum's bed with her. It was an added bonus that the bathroom was directly outside of her bedroom door for my late night tinkles. I should add at this point that when walking out into the hall to go into the bathroom, you look directly down the stairs that would lead you onto my living room on the first floor, as my mum's bedroom was on the second. On one such night around Christmas, I woke and I felt the need to relieve myself. I walked out from the door and distinctly heard the phrase, "Look," and to my astonishment, a red light, almost like the spotlight, was cast upon the wall at the very bottom of the stairs. The light had no other source. It was by itself and I was transfixed by it. Being a little kid, and only being a few days from Christmas, I knew what this light was. It must have been Santa. How else could he get into my house to know if I was being a good boy? I was so excited I began walking down the stairs to greet him, picking up my pace after the second step as it began to creep off the wall and fade into the darkness of my living room. That's when I heard him. A very strong masculine voice, different from the first. Not at all my father's, not to say he isn't masculine, but it was just distinctly different. It said, "Stop right now, go back up those stairs." I listened, turned around, and what happened next I'm not sure I would believe if someone had told me the same story. After reaching the top of the stairs, I heard a very loud crash that sent me running back to my mother's bed where I jumped straight under the covers and stayed there the whole night. When we awoke the next morning, the Christmas lights that my mother had put on the railing downstairs were pulled straight down to the bottom of the stairs, some broken from what seemed like a forceful tear, laying in a single pile. The dry sink in my living room had fallen from the wall. My mother could not explain it, My father was worried we had been the victims of a home invasion. My sister was crying. There was nothing missing. Nobody had broken in. There did not seem to be any reason that this had happened. And then I saw it, and I kept quiet about it because I was so afraid that I could not force words out of my mouth. There on the edge of the wooden dry sink which had been facing up were three indentations where the finish of the wood had been worn, almost as if a forceful grip. Something down there had grabbed it and threw it down. That's what the bang was. I was mortified. After that day I never heard a single voice again. I don't like to imagine what was waiting downstairs for me that night, if it was anything at all. But I can tell you that the reality was that something had physically acted upon two things in my house near the bottom of that stairwell. I've never heard any other whispers again, which is sad because in some ways I'd like to have thanked the man that had stopped me from going down those stairs. This happened when I was 7, I'm 20 years old now, and because of this incident I'm still afraid of the dark, especially shadowy stairwells. When I was in high school, I had a lot of these experiences. At the house my dad lived in at the time, it was really old, built in the early 1800s, there was plenty of times I'd be sitting in the living room and distinctly hear the cabinets opening and closing in the kitchen. It was just me and my dad that lived in the house, and you could clearly see when his bedroom door was shut and he was asleep, but still hear it. Normally my dad worked 7 till 3, but occasionally worked a PM or overnight shift. One night he was working until 11, I was 17 at the time. At around 8 o'clock or so, I'm sitting in my room playing Borderlands and I think I hear footsteps coming from the living room, which was adjacent to my bedroom, and I assume my dad's home early. I go back to playing Borderlands. I keep hearing the footsteps, so I pause the game and listen, and the footsteps are just slowly pacing back and forth between the living room and the kitchen in a steady rhythm. I laid in bed scared, shitless, and actually counted the steps. Every time it took 15 paces to the living room, 15 back to the kitchen. Needless to say, I did not fucking sleep that night. Had another situation at my mum's house about 2 years prior to this. Out of nowhere, my alarm clock would go off at midnight every night. I assumed it was busted and got rid of it. Fast forward 2 years, my mum gets another, brand new alarm clock for my room, also when I was 17. Suddenly, the alarm goes off at midnight, and I thought nothing of it and turned it off. Happened again the next night, and then my sister pointed out the old one I had that did it. So I checked to make sure no alarms were set, double checked at 11:56. Sure enough, 4 minutes later my alarm goes off. Freaked out and threw it out. That next night was my dad's night to have me. I had a buddy of mine over and my dad was working that night. He left for work around 2 AM and my friend had brought over an iPod dock to listen to some music on. I didn't have the clock set or anything. My friend knew nothing of the last couple of nights, so I knew he wasn't just fucking with me. So about 2 minutes after my dad leaves, we hear an alarm clock coming from my room. I went in, and you know how if you just plug in a clock without setting it, the numbers just blink on and off? Well, it was doing that, and as soon as I picked it up, the clock itself set to 12 o'clock and then just turned off by itself. So yeah, fuck paranormal shit. I'm not religious at all, but I'm 100% convinced that it happens. In one corner of my grandma's living room stood a lamp that was almost never turned off. She would change the bulb every week like clockwork, waiting until the afternoon sunlight poured through the windows and filled the room. Even then she hurried, holding her breath until the deed was done and the lamp was back on. I would ask her about it once in a while. Each time she would smile softly, tussle my hair and promptly change the subject. I didn't learn the truth until I was 13, the first time I turned off the lamp. I just wanted to see what would happen. Grandma screamed when she walked into the darkened living room, a plate of cookies falling from her hands and crashing to the floor. I could hear her praying under her breath as she raced to turn the light back on. Tears were shining in her eyes, but she turned to me, her lips pressed thin. Without warning, she slapped me hard across the face. Grandma had never so much as raised her voice before, and I was too shocked to cry. She cried enough for both of us, gathering me up in her arms and begging for my forgiveness. With her face buried in my shoulder, she finally told me about the lamp. It was a ghost light, she said. Ever since she and my grandpa had bought the house, back when they first arrived in America, the spirits of the dead had plagued her. Only when a burden threatened to drive her mad did she ask grandpa for help. She had expected him to laugh her out of the house, but he had surprised her by nodding gravely. It was he who first lit the ghost light, and as long as that beacon burned through the darkness, she never seen another spirit. I stopped visiting my grandma after that. I started gradually at first, missing a day here and there, but by the time I received the news of her death, I hadn't seen her in over 10 years. As her only living relative, I shouldn't have been surprised when I inherited our house. Yet as I sat in her lawyer's office, listening to him read her will, I was speechless. I had a difficult time paying attention after that, absorbed as I was with the business of remembering. So much love had filled those walls, so many happy memories. As I thought of my tiny, sterile apartment in the city, I quickly made my decision. I was almost overwhelmed by emotion as I walked through the front door. Everything looked exactly as I remembered it from my childhood. Houseplants still cluttered the windowsills, decorative bird plates still hung on the walls, and the ghost light still burned in the living room. Seeing the old lamp sent a chill down my spine. I froze in my tracks, the smile fading from my lips, and I couldn't help but think of the night Grandma had slapped me so many years ago. I told my mother about the ghost light the next day, but she had dismissed it as a simple old world superstition. It was the same way when she was growing up, she told me, and I shouldn't worry about it. Still, I couldn't shake the conviction that I'd finally seen the true depths of my grandma's lunacy. I ran my fingers through the fringe of the lampshade as I thought, a bloom of sadness darkening my nostalgia. Slightly heavy, I turned the ghost light off with a decisive click. Something woke me later that night. I lay in bed listening to the darkness until I heard scratching coming from the living room. Rats were the last thing I wanted to deal with at the moment, and I rolled over with a groan, determined to ignore it until the morning. The scratching continued intermittently, constantly jerking me from the edge of sleep, and I finally had enough. I threw the blanket off me and stormed out into the hall. Moonlight flooded the front of the house, and I didn't bother turning on the lights as I made my way to the living room. I knew every inch of this house, even after so many years, and I moved confidently through the dim light. I was furious at having been woken from a dead sleep, and my anger ill prepared me for what I found. An elderly woman was crouched in the corner, her gaunt back to me. She was scratching at the floor where the walls met, stopping every few minutes to cock her head. An aural of dread unfurled in a pit of my stomach. I had no idea how this woman had gotten into my house, and thought it was obvious she needed help. It took me some time to summon the courage to approach her. My hand shook as I reached out to gently squeeze her shoulder. I meant to ask her where she lived, who her caretaker was, but the words were driven from my mind when she turned and I saw her face. Her eyes were solid black, bottomless pits that didn't reflect the moonlight. Her jaw hung impossibly open, unhinged, and the dark tunnel of her mouth spiraled down into her throat. I had a moment to realise who she was, to recognise the familiar map of wrinkles in her face, the curls of her wispy hair. Then my grandma screamed. I shrieked, stumbled backwards away from the nightmare in the corner. My arms flailed in the air, reaching for the nearest lamp. And my hands touched the ghost light, I yanked the chain, filling the room with light, and she was gone. I never turned off the ghost light after that. After letting the bulb burn out one evening, I began changing it every week just as grandma had. Eventually I got married, and luckily for me my wife was tolerant of my strange fixation with the lamp. The light continued to burn, and I lived my life happy enough. But my grandson has been asking about the ghost light lately. I smile softly, tussle his hair, and promptly change the subject. For some reason, I can't bring myself to tell him the truth. I think about how I pulled away from my grandma, how I thought her crazy, and I kept my mouth shut. I worry, though. I know I won't be around forever, just as I know he will eventually turn off the ghost light. I worry that he might see me then. Twisted and wrong, scratching in the corner. This is one of two paranormal experiences I have had that I've had a hard time wrapping my head around. It's a long read, but it's worth it. I've suffered from insomnia as far back as I can remember. I was in second grade and it was really early in the morning, I think around 5 or so. I had a little TV on my nightstand and was definitely watching Lord of the Rings on VHS. I had the volume up super loud because my ceiling fan had made a ruckus throughout the night. I was super into the movie when all of a sudden, all the sounds around me started slowly fading away. I remember I became confused and reached to turn my TV up thinking it had broken, but then I realised the sound of the fan had faded away with it. The only way I can describe it is comparing it to someone turning the volume down in a car radio. I was suddenly overwhelmed by an intense feeling of euphoria. I'd never experienced anything like it. I absolutely cannot describe how utterly at peace I felt. I was able to comprehend what was happening, and then it clicked in my head that I was dying. Keep in mind that I'm in second grade, so this is a pretty intense conclusion, but I just knew. I rolled over onto my back ready to, and excited to accept my fate. That was when I saw it. There was a large white figure in my doorway, just hovering and pulsating a white aura. I quickly panicked and began calling out for my brother, whose room was across the hall. The figure glided to the end of my bed and just sat there, watching. I'm not really sure how much time passed, but the figure suddenly vanished, sound came back, and the euphoria disappeared. I jumped out of bed and ran into my brother's room, but I practically flew into his bed. He woke up and he saw how panicked I was. He began to panic as well. I was hysterical and just kept telling him it was the ghost. We did what any other kid would do and hid under his covers. After a while we got anxious and I bravely made a peephole in the blanket to check the time on the clock, hoping that it would be daylight soon. 5:30, the clock read 5:30 in the morning. Then the phone rang and it rang and it rang and it rang. Me and my brother started to panic even more. Then silence. Once again it began to ring and ring and ring. We jumped out of bed and took turns running from light switch to light switch until we had a life path to the living room. Our house was 5,000 square foot. This was not an easy task. We got to the living room and watched cartoons until my mum woke up. She was livid, yelling at us for being up so early. I told her I saw a ghost, which only made her more upset. My brother, who was always tormenting my irrational fears, got mad at her and started telling her this wasn't a joke and it wasn't my imagination. I started telling her to check the phone because I saw the ghost around 5:30 and it must have been a ghost calling. Kid logic. She went to check the phone and went to the other room for a while. Suddenly she wasn't upset anymore. When we asked if it was said ghost, she said it was a telemarketer. She was so nice about it and she let me sleep in her room for the next few days. I thought maybe since it was my brother's birthday that day that she just didn't want to argue, but she never let me sleep in her room. I got home from school on the 15th. I saw the ghost in the early hours on the 13th. My mum called me to the family room and told me to sit in her lap and that she needed to tell me something. I obliged. My great-grandma passed away in the hospital at 5:30 a.m. and the phone calls were the hospital calling to notify us. Me and great-grandma were extremely close. To this day I get chills thinking about it. I know that there are a few ways to explain the occurrence, but I know for a fact that it was 100% a paranormal experience. My mum and brother still back me up on it today. There's a small graveyard near my home in Michigan. About 2 years ago, a group of my friends and I went ghost hunting there. It was a warm night, clear skies, and I was raring to catch a ghost on my friend's camera or tape recorder. Even a cell phone video would do. The cemetery is less than an acre, so it didn't take long to scope out. We broke into groups of two and three and traversed the grounds. I wandered with a few people, changing from group to group. I felt restless. Usually when we were ghost hunting, we cracked wise, but nobody was saying much. A group near a tall monument, at least 7 feet high and shrouded in vines, called us over. There seemed to be a cold spot about the size and shape of a very tall man. I waved my hands through the air, it did feel a bit cooler, but that could have been my imagination. Everyone began taking photos, claiming they could see a figure in the digital photos. I hung near the back of the group, not seeing anything. I still felt disquieted, I didn't want to be here. That was when a cold shock squeezed my hand, right between the web of flesh between my right thumb and forefinger. I cried out, yanking my hand away, it hurt. The cold radiated slowly off my hand, and I retreated towards the gate. I'm out, something grabbed me, I'm out. I was quickly followed by the rest of the party, not so much because of my encounter, but nobody wanted to be in there anymore. It wasn't until the morning the bruise showed up, deep in the meat of my hand. Not a bad bruise, not bad enough to turn black and blue, but definitely there. Yellow and painful, right in the spot where I'd been grabbed by the cold hand. I haven't been back. I'm not spiritual, I'm not aggressive. My girlfriend and I were at my mother's doing our laundry. The washing machine and dryer are down in the basement. We head upstairs after loading everything up and get to the first floor. The stairs enter the first floor onto the kitchen, which is connected to the living room by a doorframe, without a door, and a small half wall that has decorations on it which you can see over into the living room and vice versa to the kitchen. These decorations are always changing, and I think at the time there was a birdhouse, candlesticks and like stuff, and most importantly for this story, some long-legged leg and arm dolls. These dolls did not look creepy while sitting with all the other decorations, but if you found it in an abandoned house or a similar creepy situation, you probably wouldn't touch it. We walked into the living room and I told my girlfriend I needed to grab something from upstairs room. The staircase to the second floor is small, only 8 steps, and they're on the opposite side of the half wall to the kitchen, so right next to the decorations. I head up and grab whatever it was I was getting and start heading back to the stairs. When I get to the top of the stairs and look down, I see my girlfriend with her eyes wide open. Her mouth was slightly open in shock or awe. Her skin was pale as if she was dying. She didn't make a noise at all. I'm moving down the stairs now semi-quickly, asking what's wrong, and what she's seeing with no answer from her. And before I know it, I'm at the bottom of the steps with my hand on her throat. I was stunned. I immediately pulled my hand away when I noticed. It was not like a death grip, but holding on. I would never harm her or anyone, especially in that type of situation. Well, really, any situation. I've never hurt her before. I've never choked someone before. I've never been in so much as a fight before. After I let go of her throat, she became more calm and I was able to speak but was still shook. I would be too if someone was choking me. She said that the doll that was sitting with all the decorations looked at her. It was facing away as she watched me trot up the stairs, and as I was coming back, she glanced towards the decorations and the doll's head turned and looked at her. It turned as fast as a finger snap or a blink. She knows I would not hurt her and was confused as to my reaction of her being completely frightened, as was I. In my mind, I was moving down the stairs and asking what's wrong. I got to the bottom of the steps and all of a sudden my hands were on her neck. I cannot explain why she saw or why my reaction was to grab her neck. It's like I wasn't controlling myself. My reaction was confusion and asking what's wrong. I'm not spiritual at all. If spirits, gods and demons are real, then that might explain what happened. Other than that, I have no idea. After it happened, we both calmed down. I remember looking at the doll. It was looking back at me. It felt evil and sinister. My freshman year of college, I was living on the fourth floor of my dorms. It was winter time and there was snow on the ground. It was probably around 3 or 4 in the morning and my roommate and I had both randomly woken up, but we weren't talking, as we both thought the other was asleep. Then we both heard very clear, loud knocking on our window. 4 loud knocks that you could just tell was on glass. We both said, "Did you hear that?" And we kind of spooked. 15 minutes went by and nothing happened. I was starting to fall back asleep and there it was again, 4 loud knocks. At this point I was shaking because in my mind someone had somehow climbed up to our window and was trying to scare the shit out of us. So I got up and pulled our blinds back to look for someone. No one was there, no footprints on the snow on the ground, nothing. So I got back into bed. Another 5 minutes or so and we heard the knocking again, but it was coming from what sounded like the neighbour's window. Sure enough, we heard our neighbour say, "Dude, what the fuck?" and shuffle around a little. Then like 2 minutes later, it sounded like every single window on our floor was being knocked on for about 7 seconds straight. Just absolutely insane. People started screaming and we could hear people opening their doors and running across the halls into their friends' rooms because they were terrified. It kept happening for probably 2 more hours, but only at a specific windows like every 15 to 30 minutes. Every time I was about to fall asleep, it happened again. I even texted my boyfriend who lived on the first floor to ask him if he also heard this, which he didn't. This was a very long night. No one ever found out what that was, as far as I know. My house was built in 1904. It's a single family home, wood frame, setting on a concrete block foundation. I've been living here for about 12 years. Of all the weird things that my siblings and me have seen or heard in this house, this one event is my favourite. This happened to my brother. About 10 years ago, my brother and his best friend had started a garage band playing mostly Spanish rock, alternative music, but in Spanish. His friends could only get together on Sunday afternoons. They would practice into the early evening, and they would usually call it quits by 8 p.m. This was the time I usually showed up and went to bed, because I worked a graveyard shift. This happened in late fall, so the days were getting shorter. They had just finished a long session when the decision to head to someone else's house came about. My brother handed his car keys to his buddy so they could load up the equipment. Everyone had filed out of the basement, but the tricky part was that they needed to walk all the way to the back of the basement, up the back stairs, through the kitchen doorway, down the hall into the living room, and out onto the front porch. Everyone was outside, sitting in my brother's truck, waiting for him. My brother was walking up the back stairs when he remembered that he had left his pancakes in a to-go container sitting on a speaker in the basement. He made the decision to go back. Now, the basement is not clean, with full sight lines, but there had been partitions made, and the boiler and main heating unit are right smack in the middle. So after my brother walks back, he's about to retrieve his food container, but out of the corner of his eye, he sees it. It's a shadowy figure, right in his peripheral vision. The feeling of dread and uneasiness washed over my brother. We had been taught that if you're in the presence of a spirit or ghost, and you felt a bad vibe, to say a quick prayer or to cuss at it. My brother chose the latter. He basically just told it, "Hey, fuck you, I don't have time for this shit." My brother started to walk to the back of the basement and briskly up the stairs, closing doors and turning off lights as he was walking out. The last light switch is on the opposite side of the front door. Luckily, the door was open and the light from the street lamp was flooding the living room with its amber light. My brother said he felt something at his back, but at no point did he turn around. As he flicked the last switch, the living room went dark, as did the rest of the house. As he stepped out, he pulled on the door, closing it behind him. Still holding his food container in one hand, he jogged down a few porch steps. He walked towards the front gate. Our house resides far from the main street, essentially having a large front yard but no rear garage. As he closed the gap between himself and his friend-laden truck, he kind of smiled and thought things over in his head, mad at himself for spooking out when there was no reason. He climbed into the driver's side of the truck, putting on his seatbelt and getting ready to pull out of the parking spot directly in front of the house when one of his friends asked, "Hey wait, what about your brother? Isn't he coming with us?" My brother answered, What do you mean? "He went to work early tonight. He's already gone. Do you see his car anywhere?" The next question they asked, "So then who was walking behind you when you were leaving the house?" At my old apartment, I was brushing my teeth and my makeup bag flew off the shelf and slammed into the wall across the room. No windows, no fans. The bag was all the way at the back of the shelf against the wall. It did not fall, it blew, like the opening pitch. I noped out and went to bed. Next morning, I checked my phone and I had a notification from the Sleep Android app. It records movement and sound overnight to wake you at the latest sleeping point in your sleep cycle. I do not sleep talk and I live alone. I heard on the recording my bedroom door click and creak open. It had a very distinctive creak, and a male voice talking slowly and then the door closing again. I lived in the 14th story of a building with no balconies. One needs a coded key to get in the front door and to use the elevator or open the stairwell, and then to open the door to the hallway, and to get into the front door of the apartment and to get into my bedroom. So, if I go to the bathroom and forget my key card, I'm locked out of my bedroom. It'd be insane to break into any of these. I moved out a few months later. It took exactly 2 minutes. That's how long it took to walk my dog, Ted, across the block and back to my front door. Our nightly walk, a routine. The exact same 4-house floor plans in our boring subdivision. The exact same tree sniff and pee spots. And the exact same question. Do I lock the door? I've locked the door thousands of times. Thousands. And each time, no murderers breached our doors. No monsters shambled through the garden window, and no spectres waited in hiding for me to return. Tonight I took the risk. Tonight I left the door unlocked for Ted's walk. What's the worst that could happen? He peed, we returned. I closed and locked the door. Concretely, safely. Nothing ever happens in our safe subdivision or safe city. I felt paranoid though. I needed to be sure. I checked my security cam history. I laughed at myself, imagining the intruder picking this one particular night of all nights, the first night that I lazily leave the door unlocked, just this one dog loop, just this one short walk. He wielded a hand axe. He opened the door. He smiled and winked at the camera. He closed the door, animatedly leaving it unlocked. Activity detected 2 minutes ago. I wince, trying to block out the screams. In some stroke of terrible luck, my flight is half populated by little brats, the kinds who parents ignore them and make no attempt at discipline. The seatbelt signs are off and I need a shit, so perhaps the toilet can offer a brief respite. As I head towards the back of the cabin, a plump red-faced slob trudges out from the toilet. Great, maybe his miasmic aftermath will choke me to death. That'd spare me from being gurgled and screamed at for the next 2 hours. I turn the lock, unbuckle my belt and plop down onto the uncomfortably warm seat. This one's going to be a cement block, I can tell. A real Elvis killer. After a few minutes of straining, I notice something changed. The idle chit-chat and immature squeals have disappeared. In place, there's this uniform sound of amazement. That's what I'd call it. Subdued gasps of wonder. God, that fat oaf really blew up this toilet. It smells worse now. Coppery and like piss. Did he vomit in here too? The fuck? I only realise the source of the stench after sensing my toes getting soggy. Looking down, I pull my feet up in horror. A murky concussion of reds and browns leaks under the door. My nagging sphincter goes quiet. I pull my pants up, then reach for the lock. Before I can slide the bolt, a series of deafening bangs ring out from the cabin. Panic overtakes me and I lunge for the bolt, managing to unlatch it and kick open the door. Like a dam bursting, the toilet's flooded. It's up to my knees. God, this smell. It's so much worse now. Before another thought, the plane jerks and I'm thrown forward into the opposite wall. I manage to keep balance and wade over to the end of the aisle. I'm simultaneously confused, dumbstruck and horrified. Most of the passengers are missing. The few that remain huff into oxygen masks. A long row of bright spots glide across the ceiling, left to right, so intense it leaves stains in my retinas. I can't see what the light's coming from, but it's obvious where it's bleeding through. Every window in the cabin's left side is broken. The air's thinning. Past the black dots invading my sight, I can make out something caught on the jagged remnants of windows, fluttering, torn strips, varying shades of beige, brown and white. There are drained pink underneath. It reminds me of raw chicken, only not a micron of blood leaks from them. Realising I've been standing for far too long, I lurch towards the nearest oxygen mask. My sense of balance is gone, and my fingers graze the mask as my leg is caught on an armrest. I can't see, it's dark, it's cold. I collapse to the floor, into a warm and sticky embrace. It's still dark, but at least I'm not cold anymore. I didn't grow up popular with many friends, but I never imagined how lonely my life would turn out. I never got married and I didn't have kids. I spend a lot of my free time online. There are a few people I talk to regularly, but it doesn't feel like enough. At times I feel like the weight of my loneliness keeps me from enjoying anything else. My absence from people only perpetuates my ability to make friends. On the good days, everything feels inadequate. On the bad days, it's crushing. The other day I found an obscure post on Reddit on a ritual to help lonely people. To be honest, it seemed stupid, and I didn't believe in magic. But it was something to pass the time, so I said what the heck, it's not like I'm busy with my friends. Late one night, filled with boredom, I followed the instructions. I lit the candles, I drew the symbols on the floor, and chanted the incantation. I wasn't scared or anything, I'm not a wimp, but it was creepy, even for me. The air was heavy with sorrow that night, and the final words left my lips. The room grew cold, and then nothing. Nothing happened, as I figured from the beginning. I stayed up watching some videos and then went to bed. However, a few nights later, once the sun set, these people started appearing in my yard. They looked old and their skin looked grey. They would stand there looking for me through the windows in the dark. I've never let them in. But when I listen to them, they speak in low, hushing, mournful tones, telling me how they died and how they need me. I try not to look into their eyes, they're sullen and filled with desperation. I think I'm the only one that can see them. As soon as the police show up, the old people are gone. I've done it 3 times already. And they've said I can't call anymore, else they might charge me for prank calling an emergency line. This all started with a few of them. Now there are dozens. What's worse is they've started getting into the house. Tonight they're all standing outside of my bedroom door trying to get in. I can hear their hushed voices overlap. I'm tired, I haven't gotten sleep in days. I'm afraid they will never stop visiting me with their anguish. All I want is to just be left alone. I've been blessed most of my life. I got a good job out of college, got a good deal on a house, and I even managed to get the love of my life, Sarah. Of course, like with most people, there were struggles. We always knew that having kids naturally wasn't going to be possible, so we tried every artificial way in the book for years. Nothing worked. We very nearly gave up until we stumbled upon a company doing some very innovative work. After 3 long years of trials, Sarah was finally pregnant. Sarah and I were over the moon ecstatic. Being a dad was something I'd dreamed about for a long time, and I knew Sarah felt the same way about being a mother. The next couple of months were filled with decorating the nursery, buying baby clothes, and even taking newborn classes. The problem with such excitement, however, is that when things don't work out how you'd hoped, it will be devastating. We lost the baby. The company that we'd been working with said that with such new technology, things like this could happen. They offered to try again at no charge, but we were too distraught to even consider it. We were broken. All that was between us for days was silence. Neither of us could put how we felt into words, nor would we be able to say them without crying anyway. Sarah went into a deep spiral. I would constantly find her in her nursery weeping on the floor. Every time I would try to comfort her, she would push me away. Finally, after a few weeks, I was lying in bed alone. Sarah quietly came in and laid down next to me. It was the first time we had touched since we lost the baby. She told me that she loved me, but that she didn't want to try again. She couldn't bear to go through this pain again. I pulled her in and caressed her neck with my hand. We fell asleep in each other's arms. Sarah was gone when I woke up. Startled, I got up and examined the room and saw no sign of her. I walked downstairs to the kitchen and found Sarah cooking breakfast. She had a big smile as she made me a big plate of bacon and eggs. "I can't wait for her appointment today, honey. I know this is going to be the one." I walked towards Sarah and examined her neck where I had been touching last night in bed. The LED screen read, "Reboot successful, at last save checkpoint." I smiled back and hugged her. I really couldn't ask for a better wife. Thank you all for listening. If you enjoyed, maybe check out a similar style video on screen right now. And with that said, I'll catch you all in the next one. Thank you.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.